Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxy, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Minus the Brian for the next couple days. He has taken some well-deserved, well-earned R&R. And so in the studio, I am joined by William Walter. How are you doing today, Will?
Welcome, party people. I am always happy to be here.
Yeah, we got you in studio today, and we had enough heads up, so Mother Nature got the...
The weather has cooperated. She was very well aware. We're going to ignore the cold, but I'm looking outside the windows right now, and it is lovely. It is sunny, and as long as you're sitting inside, it looks beautiful out there.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. It's December 1st. Happy December. It comes up fast.
Already, geez.
Because, I can't believe that it is already December, so I can excuse the cold. Are you lifelong Wisconsinite?
I am.
Okay,
yes,
so
sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
We're used to it. We know, we expect the cold, but when you get a nice sunshiny day, we know that you're here in studio.
I'll take it when I can get it, honestly. I still remember there were a couple of days in middle school for me. Now, obviously, that world is long gone with our ever increasing heat environment, but we had days where we got school canceled because it was like 30, 35, 40 degrees below zero wind chill. So if it's only like 35 degrees, like that's short. I know guys who would be wearing shorts out there.
Oh yeah. I had a friend throughout college, and we had, I think, the first polar vortex in a real long time was like sophomore year of college for me, and negative 30, 40 below, and he refused to put pants on still.
Every group has that one guy.
He was a Southern California boy here in Wisconsin, and he just was like, I don't need pants.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he cried that day a little bit, but
it was in the bathroom during lunch, so nobody could see it.
He stayed by his conviction. No, I think he went to one class, but classes got canceled too. So, but folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We kind of go down one there, but that's okay. If you want to join the show, share your tangent with us, 844-967-2789. You can call or text that number all hour long. Will and I will take your phone calls. We'll also be joined by a guest to talk about labor with us. Will, you want to tell the folks a little bit about who will be joining us at 2:30?
Yeah, so we got a great guest lined up. Obviously, the rail strike has been the big news of the day. So my friend Rick Uretia will be coming on. He is a University of Massachusetts Amherst master's degree in labor studies. He is a former union staff and union organizer. He's organized unions throughout the state at the nonprofit level and has traveled throughout Latin America meeting with union members. The guy is about as well-versed as you'll find anyone, not just locally, but in the state. And Rick is just an expert on the importance of unity from the working class.
Solidarity.
Which is something that, you know, we talk about all the time on Dueling Tangents. We make sure we talk about the fact that really the working class only has each other, right? The ultra rich and powerful, they got connections, they have influence, they have money.
They can ask the government to impose a deal for you to have to accept.
Yep, so, yeah, exactly. The rest of us, we have each other. That's it.
We're going to get into that. Updates about the rail strike. Also, there's one of the longest going strikes right now in the country is happening here in the coverage patterns of the signals you're listening to down in Racine, covered by our Beast of the East, WAUK 540 AM, WAUK 540 AM, and 101 FM. That signal pattern covering the Racine area where the Case IH strike with United Auto Workers 180, I believe.
180,
the union.
Yep.
And that strike has been going on for about 7 months now, Will. So we'll talk with Rick about that strike and the looming threat of a rail strike and what is going on at the national level with labor there coming up at 2:30. But like I said, those phone lines are open. If you want to join, give us a call. Send us a text, 844-967-2789. If you're not listening in the Shaw, you may be listening around the state on Civic Media in Oshkosh on Oshkosh Air Support, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, Wisconsin, and radio from the center, WRCE 1450 AM out of Richland Center. So, Will, we've got some interesting news, though, when it comes to politics already, because this week a fourth candidate announced their candidacy for state Supreme Court, and that's coming up faster, like the fact that December is upon us, up next is January, then in February we've got this state Supreme Court primary.
Dude, we just spent 2 years on the 2022 midterms.
I know.
And now it's like, all right, everybody, back to work.
Well, this is what we do here. We talk about what's going on in the politics, the news of the day, and so this is something that we're going to absolutely cover. And I thought with all of the candidates, now there's four of them, it's a nonpartisan race, I thought there would be, you know, at least a little, oh, we're thrilled to have the exciting experience to share our views and have a true campaign of ideas. But the infighting has already begun among the candidates, Will. Are you surprised by this?
You know what? I'm going to make a joke that we made the last time I was on, too. It's the King Kong versus Godzilla meme. Let them fight. Like, I am perfectly fine with that. Michaels and Clefish going at it, throwing money around left and right. I mean, did you see the Michaels quote from the other day? Whose show was he on? Jay Weber's, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Where he essentially said, you know, yeah, I spent a lot of money on this race. I wish I could have got some of it back.
I wish I could have got some of it back. Yeah, if you missed Tuesday's show, Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area joined us on Tuesday's episode of Dueling Tangents, and we had that same conversation talking about how Tim Michaels was bemoaning not the fact that he couldn't, you know, help shape of a better Wisconsin that he envisioned in his 4 years as a potential governor. No, his biggest regret is he spent all that money and he wanted some of it back.
Mm-hmm.
But you can check out the podcast, folks, out there in the listening land.
I got to throw in, Luke, you know that what he meant by that was, boy, if I was governor, Michaels Corp would get some sweet, sweet contracts that would negate all the money I spent on this race. I think the final numbers I saw, he put like $12 million of his own dollars into the primary,
mm-hmm.
and only like $6 or $7 million into the general.
Eight million. It was roughly around $20 million when it was all said and done.
So he spent 66% in the general of what he spent in the primary. Like, he's just furious that Clefish had the audacity to run against him when everybody clearly wanted me. I'm the Trump guy. Like,
well, it was an interesting. He also noted in that interview on Tuesday with Jay Weber that he was saying how the Clefish campaign needed to take a look at why he was able to take such a quick lead as well. And it was like, come on, man, you spent $12 million of your own money.
I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
That would be the absolute defining factor of why you were able to take the lead so fast in a partisan primary. But here, what's going on today with yesterday's announcement, Judge Jennifer Darrow, the Waukesha County judge that oversaw the Daryl Brooks Jr. trial over the month of October, she announced yesterday that she is running for state Supreme Court. She is a conservative Walker appointee to that position. And so she announced that she's going to file yesterday her campaign to run for state Supreme Court. And another Walker appointee to the judicial system here in the state of Wisconsin, Dan Kelly, is kind of already throwing elbows 24 hours to her into the race, Will. And I find it funny. So we have to share the quote because this is written up by Scott Bauer over at the Associated Press. And his first comment on it was, well, that didn't take long. That's Scott Bauer's little editorializing of the story he put out there. But Judge Jennifer Darrow said the national attention she got while presiding over the Waukesha parade crash trial isn't why she's running for Wisconsin Supreme Court, but her challenger, the other conservative in the race, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly, says she has no other reason to run. And this is the quote from Dan Kelly himself. Quote, I'm struggling to think of any other reason that she would believe she would be a qualified candidate for the Supreme Court, Kelly said. That's former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly, who did not get onto the Wisconsin Supreme Court for being elected by the Wisconsin is uniquely, I believe, one of six states, a handful of states around the country that elects its judges. Dan Kelly did not win election to get on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He was appointed.
I was going to say, I don't think he has won an election at this point.
Nope.
He's a perennial loser, Dan Kelly.
He ran for it in 2020 and lost to Judge Jill Karofsky, now Justice Karofsky. Yep. And so he never won a race. He was appointed there by former governor, Scott Walker. And now he says that well, there's really no judicial case or no past experience that would give Judge Darrow the reason to think why she should run for Supreme Court. And I find it fascinating. The knives are out so quickly after a, and again, folks, this is a nonpartisan primary, but as our friend Matt Rothschild over the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign likes to say, it's kind of the biggest joke in Wisconsin politics. There are absolutely parties that back candidates in these races, and these are the two conservative candidates already not trying to fight amongst the entire field, but amongst each other.
Each other, baby. Let them fight. Well, a little funny little history tidbit for you, Luke, is both of those candidates are graduates of Regent University. If you're not familiar, it was founded by Pat Robertson in 1977 as the Christian Broadcasting Network University. Didn't change its name till Regent until 1990, and it did not actually get full accreditation from the American Bar Association until 1996. So both of these judges are graduates of right-wing evangelical judicial law university.
Well, I'm sure they're both members of the Federalist Society. I'm sure that there's some deep ties to the dark money there that is in conservative judicial circles. And so it's interesting though that they're already identifying, Will, that there is a lane. Typically, there's two lanes in these nonpartisan races. You've got the conservative lane, and you've got the progressive or liberal lane, and they're not wasting any time trying to mark their territory on who's the conservative justice here. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how this race, as it's just getting started. I know that we just did this for 2 years with the midterms that got underway at the beginning of last month, and then now they're done. But this is going to be an interesting race to keep an eye on. Four different candidates. More to come, possibly.
Protecting democracy is a 24/7 job, Luke.
Yeah, it is. And talking about it, there's going to be big ramifications on abortion rights in Wisconsin. Gerrymandering,
that's the big one, yeah.
Those are the two big ones for how this makeup of the state Supreme Court is going to change with the election come February and April. Folks, you were listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Will this afternoon. But we've got some more headlines coming up with somebody getting in a special election race, possibly, here in the state Senate. So we'll get into that in your phone calls, 844-967-2789. Dueling Tangents. We'll be right back.
But I'd like to make some of the money back that I spent, and spent a lot of it.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Will this Thursday afternoon. I almost had to think about what day it was, Will. But
time is an illusion.
It is. It's cyclical. Doesn't matter what day it is. But it's Thursday, December 1st. And we've got some breaking news coming out of Washington, D.C. We were talking about the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but now this has to deal with the U.S. Supreme Court. Will, effectively, the court is going to continue the pause on the Biden administration's plan to cancel student loan debt. It's going to remain blocked, that executive action, by the Biden administration. But the highest court in the land, the U.S. Supreme Court, the justices agreed to take up the case in late winter. So they're going to hear the case, but they're going to remain blocking the forgiveness plan for the time being. So that is breaking news out of the top of the hour in Washington, D.C. Today. And Brian and I like to talk about how 2 o'clock hour is pretty prime for breaking news. So we tend to get that from time to time. So you want to tune in to Dueling Tangents every single weekday from 2 to 3 p.m. so you can catch breaking news and hear our reactions on it, Will. What do you think about the fact that the Supreme Court is taking up the case, but is going to remain blocking the loan forgiveness for millions of student loan borrowers around the country?
Well, nobody is surprised by that, right? I can't be the only one who didn't expect the ultra-conservative Supreme Court to side with big business with the ultra-wealthy. Like, that's what they do. But I guess my first question would be, what does late winter mean? You know, like, in Wisconsin,
February?
Who uses that as like a time definition, though?
Well, do you think we're in winter now?
Technically, we're not. It's not exactly. December 21st
exactly.
yet. But
so it's
got
to be sometime.
Right. Also, just give me like a month then, Supreme Court. Tell me like, all right, we're going to look at this in January.
They don't
want
to tie themselves down to an actual work schedule. They use the ambiguity of the season's will to make sure that we'll hear it when we hear it kind of thing.
They learned from the Wisconsin State Legislature, right?
I don't know which one, the chicken or the egg.
Who did it first.
It's definitely a strategy that. Unfortunately, it's a lot of forms of government like to do that.
Did they specify late winter, like a year? Because maybe that's late winter of 2027.
No,
like,
I think that it's gonna be this winter. So
are implying that, but
it is,
you know,
that I am accepting that as an implication. But something that we know is going to be coming up is most likely, more likely than not, we're gonna get a special election for somebody, the state senator retiring today, longtime serving state senator Alberta Darling. She announced last week that effective the end of the day today, she would be retiring from the state Senate. And that means that, first off, come January, Republicans will not have a supermajority.
Yep, that
when
seat
it comes
is
the
supermajority. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that will prevent a 22-seat supermajority for the Republicans in the state Senate. But it also means that there's going to be a... more likely than not, special election on this upcoming spring election for the 8th state Senate district. And so we learned today that state representative Dan Knodel is going to run for the Republican primary, at least. We don't know if there's going to be primaries. If there's enough candidates, they will have to field them. Sounds like we've already got one contestant in the race for this 8th Senate district, and that's your neck of the woods, the state, Will.
That is, in fact, that is my assembly candidate at the 24th Assembly District.
He's your candidate. You mean your representative?
Or my representative. Okay. Good. Yes, that is a very important distinction. I'm glad you made that point. That is my representative, unfortunately, mm-hmm. and I grew up about a block away from him, so we're pretty well-versed with Knodel up in my neck of the woods. To give a little bit of a base on Alberta Darling, just to touch back on
she's been
this
state
seat
senator.
That she has occupied quite literally my entire life. She first joined the state legislature, winning a special election in 1990 to join the assembly, I believe, the 10th district. She served out the remainder of her two-year term and then was elected in 1992 to the state senate, a seat she has held ever since. I, of course, was born at the end of 1993, so that is the only state senator that I have known for my entire life.
Yeah, that is. She's been serving in that legislative body for your entire life.
North of 30 years at this point now.
And so she's retiring. I guess when you hit a certain age, when you resign from something, you're retiring from it.
It's an assumption, right? Maybe she does want to get back. She wants to pull a, what's his name? I'm picturing his face. Steinecke. She wants to go back into private industry now where she knows she'll make more money.
Pass the torch to community leaders. No, I believe she announced retirement. And so she is stepping down. We've got Dan Knodel in this, going to leave the state assembly potentially to run for the state Senate office. What are your thoughts? Are you hearing anything on the ground of what this this shakeup with Darling leaving may look like for the 8th Assembly District or 8th State Senate District?
I think the first thing we have to touch on is what you mentioned from the get-go, and that this seat represents the supermajority. This is mm-hmm. something that Republicans are going to be very active in fighting for because it guarantees that they have the ability to impeach anyone that they have any interest in impeaching. With that being said, I believe final numbers from the midterms was the 8th Senate District went to Michaels by 3 points, and the three assembly candidates that were in the district went Republican by 8 points. So it's not as outlandish a gerrymander as we have seen in some other districts. For example, my 24th Assembly District, which is plus 25 to Trump in 2020. It's a winnable seat.
The overall district, I think, was... Plus 12 Trump in 2020.
Okay.
So that's roughly it's the interesting part too, because so the 8th did not, it wasn't affected because there weren't, she didn't run for re-election these past midterms. So this was the first time that we had these new maps in place, but I believe the old district is what went plus through redistricting, I think it used to be a +5 Trump district, and now it's a +12 Trump district, if I'm getting my numbers off the top of my head correct. And so it'll be interesting if she, whoever runs in this special election, are running on the 2020 maps or the 2021 maps, mm-hmm. 2022. So, folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents. We're going to have a conversation about labor with Rick Urita. I hope I'm pronouncing Rick's last name correctly. But he's going to be joining Will and I in this upcoming segment. But if you want to join, share your tangent on the phone lines, 844-967-2789. Dueling Tangents. We'll be right back. Back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Will this afternoon. Brian taking some much-needed R&R, and Will is joining me here in the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side. You're listening to the program across Civic Media here in Madison on Devil Radio, in Waukesha on the Shaw, Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, Lake Air in Amory, and Radio from the Center in Richland Center. And if you want to join the conversation, share your tangent, 844-967-2789. And Will, you have kindly lined up our guest this afternoon. Would you like to introduce him to the listening audience?
I would love to, Luke. Now, everybody knows what Luke and I think, so we like to bring experts on from time to time to...
I'm no expert. I will always say that. I am a jack of all trades, master of none. I am not an expert, so I like having excellent conversations.
We're the talking
with people,
heads, right? That's the intro.
Ladies
stage.
And gentlemen,
just
yes,
the talking heads.
Exactly. That is what I normally don't like the talking heads, but I've morphed into one myself, and so that's what we're doing here at Dueling Tangents. We're going to be joined by an expert.
So today we got Rick Urrutia. Rick is a University of Massachusetts Amherst graduate, master's degree in labor study. He's traveled throughout Latin America meeting with union members. He's been an organizer at the nonprofit level throughout the state. I mean, this guy really knows his stuff. Rick, what's up? How you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we greatly appreciate you coming on and talking to us about what's going on, because Rick, if I left it up to the national media, I would think that the potential for rail workers to strike is them making maybe a callous decision to really drastically affect the national and possibly global economy if they were to strike. That's what the national media wants us to think. Can you share a little light on what's going on with this rail strike and how we got to where we are now, and why is the ability to strike for these workers still something that we need to absolutely protect?
Sure, right on. And thank you guys again for letting me be on your show. I also run a labor podcast, and we've been covering this railway strike since September. I first read about it in Labor Notes magazine, and ever since then, we've been following the capitalist media, union press releases, as well as a group called Railroad Workers United for our news and updates. And essentially what's going on here, you know, in case you're tuning into this for the first time, is that 110,000 workers, railway workers, may go on strike starting December 9th. And it's the workers who are members of 13 unions versus 5 companies. And what the workers are demanding at this point is sick days, and the company's refusing to give them these sick days. So now they're in a position where they may be striking.
And Rick, are we talking like 15, 20 sick days? How many sick days are we talking?
That I don't know offhand. Whatever the workers may need. I mean, you know, it's their workplace. They know how many sick days they need.
Well, I heard it got dwindled all the way down to 4. Like, this isn't a whole lot of sick days.
They're not asking for a month.
My understanding, this is kind of the bare minimum amount of sick leave that they're asking for. And
yes.
And they're being met with really no regard. The companies running these railways are pretty adamant that they want to offer 0 sick days for these workers.
Yeah.
I want to toss in real quick that Bernie Sanders made a fascinating point the other day. Guaranteeing 7 paid sick days to rail workers would cost the rail industry $321 million a year. That's less than 2% of their profits. These companies spent $25.5 billion with a B on stock buybacks and dividends this year only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This year only, and they can't spend $320 million on the worker.
That's exactly the type of thing that we're up against, you know, because the numbers that I looked at were for the last 3 months, or quarterly profits. And for that, in the last 3 months, these corporations have made $81.5 billion. And when you talk about how much it's going to cost to pay for sick days for these workers, it's in the millions of dollars. You know, so no matter what millions of dollars it is, it's going to be minuscule compared to the profits that they're making.
It's pennies compared to the billions of dollars that these corporations are bringing in. You're exactly
right. And it's the workers themselves who are creating this wealth, right? It's the workers themselves who are generating these revenues, keeping production going, creating these profits. So how come they're not allowed to have sick days? You know, that's the kind of questions that this strike is raising. You know, you look on the capitalist media and they're raising all types of alarms, you know, talking about the auto industry, the chemical transportation industry, fuel, food, commuting, construction, how there's going to be layoffs and shortages and stuff like that. Man, you know, then just give them sick days. You know, no one wants to see Atlantis plummet to the bottom of the ocean. You know, just all they're asking for is sick days.
And they're not asking for a whole lot. And this is a theme that recurs over and over and over again when you see labor negotiations.
In every industry in the world.
Yes, yeah. Across not just the railways, but in education, when it comes to teachers demanding sometimes just the most basic needs to be met in these increases for contract negotiations. They're painted as these big, awful union leader bosses that are just fat cats, and they just want it because the unions benefit, and it's not really the workers that benefit. And so, Rick, when it comes to being able to talk about stories like the rail strike, when or anytime you're talking about labor demanding what is right for them to be able to contribute to those profits, as you mentioned, Rick, it is the workers doing their jobs that make those profits. And how can we better frame these discussions and talking with other individuals in our lives that maybe, like you said, they're just tuning in for the first time, and the only thing they are hearing is these media storylines that are saying, well, if the workers strike, this
is
going to be
it's going to
be really costly.
Or
the fears that are promoted up by these headlines, making it sound like it's the workers that are causing the situation that we are in.
Well, honestly, that's exactly it. I mean, the two numbers being tossed out in the media right now is that this strike is going to cost the economy $2 billion a day. That's one number. The other big number being tossed out is $60 million a day. You know, whatever the case it may be, whatever the number may actually be, and I think those numbers are bogus, by the way, but let's say it is $2 billion. Let's entertain those numbers for a second. And let's entertain, you know, how production will come to a snarling halt and, you know, there'll be mad. We can avoid all this. We can avoid all this. Just give them sick days.
Yeah.
It's that simple. It's that simple. And, you know, for me, this strike is particularly interesting because the amount of power involved, you know, it's 110,000 workers. That's really not a lot of workers. It's like 235 million workers in the U.S. workforce, something like that. But 110,000 workers getting the capitalists, getting these companies to panic at this level. I mean, they're turning around and they're begging Congress to intervene. Now, these are the same companies. These are the same corporations. This is the same capitalist ruling class that usually says, oh, no, government off of free trade. Oh, government off of
it's the free market.
You know, deregulation, yeah. You know, laissez-faire, invisible hand. But now that they're about to get spanked by some workers, yeah, they turn around and they lobby their congressmen, they lobby their senators, who whatever political representatives they have in Congress, they're turning to them now and when they want bailouts.
Yeah,
this strike raises those sorts of questions because these workers really are in a source of power. I mean, what greater power than to be able to bring to production to a halt in 30% of transportation in the U.S.? I mean, that's an incredible amount of power. And the capitalists know this. You know, they too study history, and they can go back to 1877 and the great railway strike back then. And what that did, you know, that was accompanied by 12 general strikes, you know, and workers just took over production and started running it themselves. They don't want lessons like that exposed, because that's our own working class history that we could use again. You know, they don't want to give us ideas. They also don't want to give us ideas because, for instance, the Teamsters at UPS are about to enter contract negotiations. They don't want a repeat of the 1997 UPS strike. And if the railway workers are successful, it's going to embolden other workers, other unions, other workers at UPS, Starbucks, Amazon's, other workers who right John now Deere, are getting more emboldened. This would further embolden and create some kind of labor turmoil that they don't want to deal with.
Yeah. I think that's the best point possible. The fact that, like you just said, 110,000 workers in an economy that's 235 million deep is really nothing. If 110,000 workers can have this much of an impact, imagine what all of us together can do.
Yes.
110,000 people are going to potentially cripple the economy, according to mainstream media. If the working class can actually unite in serious numbers, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million people getting together, oh, man, dude, we could change things overnight.
All that. And even just getting behind these railway workers, man, and extending the solidarity, honoring the picket line. Don't be a scab. You know, don't support the military intervention or Congress intervention. Don't support that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and these are workers just trying to make ends meet just like ourselves. But they just happen to be in an industry that can really, I mean, this is like workers having a switchblade up to the throat of the capitalists.
And
you know, they're at the jugular. So it will be interesting to see what happens. And no matter how this lands, I think we're going to be talking about this for years.
And Rick, for the last several months, if not all of 2022 and a little bit before then, we've been hearing about it's inflation that's causing these prices to go up. It's inflation. We know that corporate profits are at an all-time high, though. The leading cause to rising prices is the fact that corporate profit margins have been increasing more than anything else. It is the leading cause.
Across the board.
So is this not the logical conclusion for workers to demand more in these contracts and to be able to have the dignity to take a day off if they're sick?
Of course. You know, rent has been going up across the country everywhere in every single city. The cost of food, the cost of gas, you know, wages have remained stagnant. You know, it's even the minimum wage, that's its own struggle. That's accompanied by its own little boogeyman. Oh, that's going to cost $5 billion a day. That's society is going to collapse if we raise the minimum wage. You know, anytime that workers stand up and make a demand, you know, the capitalists are going to come back at you with that sort of thing. But, you know, we need to make those demands because we need to survive in this world.
Right. And so that was the bigger part of my question is that not when corporations try to get away with raising their prices and then blaming it on the boogeyman of inflation, is a strike or the potential for a strike not the next logical step for workers who are in a union that can see those corporate profits rise, but their own, they are not seeing those benefits in the layman's terms, trickle down to them. We're not seeing the working class be able to also benefit off the fact that corporate profits are the highest that they've been in 50 years. You would think that those corporations would want to invest in their workers and to be able to not have stagnant wages, but to invest in their workforce. And we're not seeing that. And so do you believe this is going to be a strike that happens? Because a week from tomorrow is December 9th. This could be coming to a head in just over 8 days now. And you as you said, you've been talking about this, or you've been following this since September. We've only got about a minute and a half until we got to take a commercial break, Rick. But if you could give us kind of the brief summary of what you think is going to happen on December 9th, and we can continue on the other side of this break.
Yeah, the short answer is that I don't have an answer. I think it can pan out in a few ways. There may be a strike. There may be a strike by a small group of workers, or Congress may intervene. But I think each one is its own discussion.
Okay, and that's important as well to point out that it's up in the air whether or not yesterday the House of Representatives did pass a government intervention that would pretty much resolve this labor dispute is what the corporations are thinking and what Congress is thinking. The House of Representatives did add 7 sick days into that proposal. It's questionable of what's going to happen with that when it comes to the U.S. Senate, where there's a much more 50-50 even split, and we don't know. So we're going to continue the conversation. We are joined by Rick. Rick, if you could pronounce your last name for me. I don't want to butcher it on air.
No, you're good. You're good. It's Rick Urrutia.
Urrutia. Okay. I can't roll my R's like that. I apologize.
You're good.
Rick, we really appreciate you joining us here on Dueling Tangents. We're going to continue this conversation about labor. If you want to join the conversation, share a tangent, 844-967-2789. You're listening across Civic Media. We got one more quick break, and then we will be back for the final segment to wrap up the day. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. You're listening to this fine program across Civic Media. If you want to follow the show, you can follow us on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. You can follow the network at Civic Media US. And I'm joined in studio by William Walter. And we are joined via Zoom by Rick
Urrutia.
You sounded, it sounds amazing. When you say it, it sounds amazing. I just can't.
Well, thank you.
I was weird. Well, not side tangent here, folks. But growing up, my sister was smart. She took Spanish and she took it all the way through. She's a nurse in the Milwaukee area. So she is fluent. She got her a degree in it in school. And she went down the right path. My brothers and I, we like German. And so we took German in high school because it was one of the two languages offered in the Oak Creek School District. And so we took German, and I have a love for Germany. And they're playing right now, so that's kind of where my focus is. But it jogged memory. My sister went to Costa Rica, who Germany's playing right now in the World Cup, and got me an Alemania jersey, which is Germany in Spanish. And I should have wore that today for the match because it would have had connections and tangents to both. Yeah. Hey, man, there's a lot of balls in the air around here with Civic Media right now, so I'm okay to drop that one. But it looks like Germany may pull out a victory and advance to the knockout round, so I'm looking forward to that. Rick, are you a big World Cup fan?
No, actually, but, you know, that's okay. I can't help but just get sucked into it, so if it's on, I'm sitting down.
There you go. I am the same. I'm that way for sports. Just
if the most talented humans on the planet are doing something that they're passionate about, I don't care what the activity is. Yeah. It's probably going to be interesting.
Yeah, and that goes for the Olympics, the World Cup. I like watching. Like, I'll put on whatever's on ESPN. If there's a cornhole tournament,
I was just gonna say I've seen cornhole on ESPN.
I watch the Little League World Series when it's on. I'm a fan of sport in general, and so I'll put it all on. But the World Cup is one that I do get excited for. But getting back to the story here with labor, Rick is joining us to talk about what's going on with the rail strike that is potentially looming and the potential congressional intervention that may come as well. And Rick, is it beneficial if the U.S. Congress passes and President Biden signs a deal that would effectively hamstring the union, I believe you said 11 or 13 unions?
Yeah, the 13.
13 unions that are trying to negotiate these new contracts. Is that an effective way for labor disputes to be handled? And can you tell us a little bit about just if this is historically unprecedented or if this is something that's happened in the past?
Yeah, you know, I think the best way to do it is to let the workers speak for themselves and craft mm-hmm. their own demands. And in this case, the demands are very reasonable. They're asking for sick days in the age of global pandemics. You know, and the companies can certainly afford it. So
yeah, we didn't even touch on that aspect. The fact that we're quite literally in a global pandemic. If you're forcing sick people to come to work, you are actively hampering your business rather than just giving them a couple of days off to recover. It's so absurd.
Yeah. And you know, like all these presidential boards and the different laws that apply to railway workers, they came straight out of 1877. They learned all those lessons. So yes, the capitalists and Congress have made sure to, you know, create these laws to keep these workers very tame. But again, you know, they're sitting in such a powerful position where they essentially have a switchblade up to the jugular of these companies and to production in the U.S. that they have all this power. So why not just give them sick days? We can avoid all this drama, all these doomsday predictions. We can avoid all this. They're asking for sick days.
Yeah, they're not asking for the world here. I feel like it's also important to point out that the United States is the only like developed nation in the world that doesn't offer the bare minimum of the sick days in the labor laws that we have on the books. And so we are an outlier in the fact that these corporations are able to profit as much as they are. And then for the demonization that these labor unions and these workers are receiving in how this story is portrayed is just really upsetting. But then it also goes that we have to be talking about these things, Rick, because here in Wisconsin, there's also one of the longest running strikes going on right now in southeastern Wisconsin is in Racine with United Auto Workers 180.
And that's right.
And this is 7 months.
This is something that's going under the radar. And I fault myself for not talking about it more as well. I understand the midterms were busy. We've been obsessed with media cycles, with politics, but this is a huge deal. What's going on with UAW 180? And can you talk a little bit about what's going on with that strike there, Rick, and why you think we're not seeing more coverage about one of the longest running strikes in the nation happening right here in Wisconsin?
Sure. What's happening in Wisconsin at Local 180 is that you have 180 members of you have the UAW on strike there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've been on strike for 6 months now. And we as in the Labor Podcast and other people in Wisconsin, have organized a Solidarity Day because they need our support. You know, the beautiful thing about strikes, including the railway strike and this strike over here with Case Holland and the UPS, to any strike, is that the gains are immediate. You know, if you go on strike and you're successful, you immediately have a wage increase. You know, this in comparison, for instance, to lobbying Democrats or lobbying Congress or lobbying the press, that takes years. You know, so that's part of the power in a strike. So that's part of what's at stake here is the power of the strike. And just remaining in solidarity with those who have been on strike. You know, these when strikers put their lives and their necks on the line, you know, that's for us as well. You know, whatever gains union members and striking workers can achieve, that's going to help us as well. So we need to be in solidarity with them because an injury to one is an injury to all. So we need to turn out for CNH workers who have been on strike for 6 months. We need to turn out for railway workers, possibly for Amazon workers, Starbucks workers. You know, all of these workers are very active right now and hopefully breathing some fresh air into the lungs of the labor movement.
And Rick, I would be remiss if I did not share in that solidarity and have you plug your podcast here now. We only got about a minute left in the show, but how can listeners learn more about the podcast that you put out there for the updates on labor?
Okay, we're still a little new. So our main thing right now is on Facebook. Okay. It's facebook.com/WeRiseFightingLaborPodcast. We broadcast weekly. We cover the news. And we've also been helping to organize this December 17th Solidarity Day in Racine. It's going to take place at 3323 Kearney Avenue from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. And again, this is a solidarity and event. This is a solidarity event in solidarity with the striking workers from Local 180 who've been on strike for 6 months.
Fantastic.
You can go to our Facebook page, see the flyer, and get more details.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you joining us, Rick. You can check out the podcast to learn more about what Rick is doing in regards to labor updates. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Will this afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. We will talk to you then.
Take it easy, party people.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.